This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Our next speaker is Poppy Wenham, who came from a very different background, and I guess in keeping with our other two speakers that we've already heard, didn't start her working life thinking that she would be dealing with collection issues in a museum context. Poppy has previously been the registrar at the Australian War Memorial, and she's currently on secondment to the National Museum of Australia as the manager of registration.
Well, thank you very much, Jo. And it's been a very interesting discussion so far this morning, and I'm interested to see how many threads really I found I'm picking up, hopefully, in the talk that I'm about to give now. So what I would like to do is raise some issues and I guess to start a dialogue about what I see as a challenge in adapting museum practice to at least, if not encompass, to consider the acquisition and management of born digital collection material. And you might wonder how I think that fits into a session that's focused around access. But as was said earlier this morning, for me, access is a given as one of the goals of museums. If our collections are not accessible, I'm not sure why we've collected them. But before we can provide that access, we have to acquire things and we have to manage them. So I'm interested in this conversation because I think born digital is a growing area for us that we must make a conscious decision about whether we engage with or ignore. In their simplest forms, as we've discussed this morning, museums are places for the keeping, exhibition and study of objects. Objects of scientific, artistic, historical merit. And distinct from libraries, which have a long history in really looking after the information, in museums we've traditionally focused on physical manifestations of culture. Now, as Jo alluded to, I came to museums through the performing arts. And I'm passionate about objects because of the way that they can tell stories. Objects have an amazing capacity to help us to understand the experiences of people in other cultures, in other places, and in other situations, or to shed light on our own lives and our own experiences. The other thing that I think we need to pay merit to is that more than any other cultural institutions, museums have shown a remarkable capacity to adapt. Once the realm of the private collector, museums were curiosity cabinets of strange and interesting things, and we've discussed a slight nostalgic yearning for those days. And even in my childhood, museums were still places that were object-rich but interpretation poor. But I think today, the words like context, provenance, interpretation and access are essential concepts in a modern museum. The physical object is the catalyst for sparking the visitor's imagination and leading them into the world of the exhibition, the world that the curator wants to share. So along the way to get there, museum practice has adapted to accommodate new media. Museums have seen an explosion of that new media and an explosion of new objects into our collections. Glass plates, negatives, photographs, film, video, audio recordings on wire, wax cylinders, on vinyl and on tape, and now on those CD disc things. We've accommodated all of these new things, sometimes with a bit of soul-searching about the validity of certain types of objects. Most institutions have, for example, come up with a range of collection types. So we at the NMA have a core collection, which is the National Historic Collection, but we also have subsidiary collections for props or archival material or support material or education material. And many other museums have made the same choices. Provenanced examples sit above type examples, and facsimiles and replicas occupy a grey netherworld on the fringes of collections. So to paraphrase George Orwell, all objects are equal, but some are more equal than others. In terms of actual management of these items, though, we still always had a physical original artefact, an object that we could acquire and accession and research and display and make accessible. An object that we could put a number on and register and stocktake and preserve and manage. So, what's born digital? Well, as Jennifer was saying earlier this morning, many of the things that we've traditionally collected are now being born digital. And a good example of that are maps, architectural drawings, CAD, diaries, cartoons. All of these things are commonly, once hand-drawn, now being created on computers. They're born digital. Sometimes we can still print out a physical version, but often we don't need to. In addition to those examples, there are whole new things coming into existence that exist purely in the digital sphere. There are wikis, blogs, tweets, online games, and all of these things are genuine expressions of our society and our culture that can only exist digitally, sometimes uniquely, but often shared in the clouds. There is no unique physical object for museums to collect or display, and there's nothing tangible at all. Does this matter? Can we adapt our existing practice to accommodate this material, or do we ignore it as ephemeral, knowing that the platforms will soon be obsolete and the world will have moved on, and tweets will feature in some future exhibition as an odd insight into the noughties, just like yo-yos and hula hoops or Pokemons and Tamagotchis, passing fads of other generations? I just want to make clear that what I'm not talking about here is digital preservation strategies. I think there's been a lot of work around digitisation, and which is making a digital copy of an object to facilitate access and to support preservation, including the management of format obsolescence. I agree with earlier talkers that I think digitisation for access is extremely important, but it does not replace the real thing. It is a way of managing the preservation of the object. In most cases with digital preservation, it's really clear what the source object is and what are the digital copies that are used for preservation and access. Almost all organisations have clear policies about digitising their collections, and many have resources and projects underpinning this work. The work is important, but it can blur our thinking, I believe, about born digital material. Far fewer organisations seem to have policy around the collection and management of born digital material. In my research, it seems that libraries, particularly in the UK and US, are dealing with this topic reasonably well, but I have found no explicit policies for museums. It's a topic that's being canvassed in the blogosphere, but there seems to be little definitive benchmarking or decision-making around the topic. So I want to ask, what do we need in a born digital collection management policy or set of procedures? And just before I go on, I'll give you a couple of examples of the sort of things that I've come across in my registrar practice. So the one that started me thinking on this was a bequest that was made to the Australian War Memorial while I was the registrar there by Michael Southwell Keeley, and he had developed a website which was a database of war memorials around Australia. And the database could be searched both geographically, so you could go to a place and see a picture of the war memorial, and it also listed the names of all the people recorded on the war memorial. You could also search by name so that you could do genealogical research with the site. Now, Michael created the site, but he didn't create the information on it. He had a community of interest who took photographs, recorded the information, and informed the website. On his death, as I said, Michael bequeathed that website to the Australian War Memorial, created a lot of questions, which are good questions to consider. What actually was bequeathed? Was it the website as it stood on the day of his death? The website as it stood on the day that probate was granted? The website at some other point in time, because it was a changing thing? Should we just download it onto a CD and accession and keep the CD? At the moment, those questions are still out there. The website is still hosted on a third-party ISP, and the memorial is effectively a silent partner in keeping that website up there. I don't think that matters. I think what matters is that we ask the questions about that collection. Another example for me, I think, is in the field of diaries. And again, for me, this is a war memorial example. The war memorial holds thousands of diaries from the First World War. They are wonderful, wonderful accounts. And they also carry with them a physical culture that is richer than just the stories they embody. We have diaries with bullet holes in them, diaries with dog-eared corners, diaries that are stained and torn and ragged. In the Second World War, there were far fewer diaries, and in later conflicts, there are almost none. Today's soldiers are keeping blogs, and there are so many of these blogs that there's now a term for it. They're called S-blogs, or soldier blogs. Now, a blog isn't a diary, and I'm not pretending that it is. It's deliberately produced for publication. It's written with the intention of a third-party audience. But in the absence of diaries, the blogs are all we've got. Should we be collecting them or not? And finally, cartoons. The NMA first began its annual cartoon exhibition. 100% of the cartoons were hand-drawn. The museum had a physical object to acquire if it chose. By 2009, 72% of the cartoons, or 63 out of 87, were born digital. Now, currently, high-quality images of the born digital originals are being generated for the exhibition, and then these are being acquired into the museum collection. Is this the best solution, or should we be acquiring the digital originals into the NHC in the same way that we are acquiring their analogue counterparts? The point of these examples is just to show, I think, that we're in an area of developing policy, but born digital material is coming, whether we like it or not. So I feel that we need some way to assess whether born digital material meets our collection development policy, and I think that this is reasonably straightforward, although we need to mesh that with our analogue policy. We need to consider collection types. Should we treat born digital material as a class of material on its own? This is a common approach in libraries, where born digital material goes into special collections, although even that approach is being discussed for appropriateness at the moment. Or should we treat born digital material like the analogue material it is closest to? Images like photographs, blogs and websites like other published material. Should we treat born digital material as a separate collection type, but within the collecting sphere that it's closest to? This model sits well with current ideas of curatorial subject matter expertise. What are the pros and cons of these approaches? What are the expectations of the public and external stakeholders? I'm not sure. We need some brainstorming and debate around this to come up with a solution that is effective and appropriate. I think there's clear merit in establishing a collaborative approach in line with decisions being made at other institutions. But how will we facilitate this? Museums also need to work out what the born digital material is that they're acquiring and how they might store, preserve and manage that digital asset. So I've raised a few issues which I think are the things we consider when we manage analogue collections in the digital light. So the first thing for me is metadata. Now, metadata is the digital documentation. It provides information about the digital asset, particularly about its structure and organisation. It's the glue that holds the digital asset together, but it also contains critical information about the creation, format, modifications, authorship, and many other contextual aspects of the digital item. Importantly, in respect to issues I want to touch on, metadata may be embedded or it may come in a wrapper. Why this matters is we have to manage both bits. As we already know with physical objects, an object with no provenance is a sad object. Management and preservation, as I said, so they need to manage both of those things. But there's questions about that. Do we need to standardise the metadata? Probably. Will we need to enhance the metadata, for example, to support geotagging or other yet unimagined future initiatives? Again, probably. If we do this, though, does this change the inherent nature of the original digital object we're acquiring? Clearly. Is that acceptable? It's not with a physical object. Should we keep the original item and then make an access copy, which is where we might standardise and flesh out the metadata so as to manage the integrity of the original? Perhaps. That's what a lot of libraries are doing. Storage and management. As in physical object collection management practice, to ensure ongoing access, a unique persistent identifier has to be assigned to every digital collection item and also to each deliverable part of a digitised collection. But we need to link the source items to their access and preservation copies and any other derivatives that we may create so that we don't lose the original or, really, worse still and far more expensively, end up storing vast repositories of unnecessary digital clones. The digital asset needs to be accessible within the same regime as other collection items, i.e., in my view, it must have a presence on the organisation's collection management system. It's likely, however, to be managed through some other form of digital asset management system. So care needs to be taken in linking those two systems and ensuring that those links are strong and ideally that the persistent identifier is portable between the two IT systems. How might we replicate the sort of secure museum storage that a physical object would get? Should we have dedicated secure storage and off-site backup separate from other museum systems for the source work? I think so. Should we consider different types of backup, such as tape, rather than server replication? I imagine that storage for source-borne digital material would have restricted access, strong audit trails, and so that the digital assets are just as safe as the physical items in a repository store. But there are important decisions to be made here, although as the actual cost of digital storage is getting cheaper and cheaper, the actual cost to manage that storage, which is a human cost, gets more and more expensive. So we can't be lulled into thinking just because terabytes are cheap that we can store everything. In digital terms, preservation is about retaining the digital file integrity using some regime of checksum and parity checking to ensure that the file acquired retains its original characteristics, i.e. the strings of ones and zeros stay in the same order. But what about platform obsolescence? Well, it's not only possible, but it's now easy to use online format registries to check the life cycle of an incoming digital asset. In digital preservation terms, it's completely reasonable to change the format of a created digital asset to ensure ongoing accessibility, management, and format security. But if we do this with a born digital asset, are we changing the inherent nature of the original digital object? Yes, I think we are. As with the metadata discussion, should we retain the original item in its original and potentially unreadable format just for the sake of historical authenticity, but migrate the preservation and access copy to more relevant formats over time? Does this make sense? This is the practice that seems to be most popular with other collecting institutions. I'm not going to go into the matter of rights, but since rights management is effectively no different whether an object's virtual or tangible, but we do need to consider in digital, born digital, the rights inherent in the source platform owner. For example, the blogging platform that the soldier's diary is created on. Useful lives is another issue. No matter what preservation strategy we apply, useful lives is a very untested concept with digital assets and relies entirely on platform migration. It's a given that digital assets will have a much shorter life than the analogue items in collection. There's been a lot of work around digital life expectancy in the US and the UK for commercial applications. So, for example, you can go onto websites that give you methodology that model the digital life cycle of any asset. But this is a consideration for museums because the balance of the amount of resources you need to acquire and collect and maintain the object against a life cycle that may be only 3 to 5 years may make us say that this is simply not worthwhile. To some degree, the life cycle also impacts on value, certainly for the accountants, if not for the collection managers. The degree to which we may be able to commit resources to the acquisition and management of born digital collections may ultimately come down to a cost-benefit analysis. Disaster management is also a consideration. Born digital collections need to be considered in the organisation's business continuity and disaster planning regime. This is probably obvious, but it requires resources and policy because we need to ensure that the born digital repository doesn't become an accidental sacrifice to an IT disaster where the emphasis is likely to be on rapid restoring of normal business functions and not on the born digital repository. And finally, we need to be clear-headed and ruthless about the media that the digital asset arrives on. In my view, once a digital asset is safely transferred into its secure digital repository and it's paritory checked, so we know we've acquired the right thing, the CD, DVD, hard drive, thumb drive, floppy drive, or punch card that it arrived on can go in the bin. It's no different to the cardboard box that a physical collection item might have been packed into. But at the moment, I know that many of us are still storing and managing those physical media. As I said at the outset, born digital collection management challenges our collection management paradigms and processes. I think this is a challenge that museums can rise to and overcome. I firmly believe that we need to be very mindful of the work occurring in the library field to inform our decision making, although we may not necessarily go down the same path. It's a given for me that museums should be acquiring digital material and that we should be engaging with these questions, but I appreciate that this is not a given for everybody. I don't mind, so long as we have the discussion. Thank you very much.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.